Blog Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here, yeah. Is for my people in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We hail. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughs up a lung. They're looking around the Jumbotron show and past the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Drucker.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
This one mic.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
That's right. As we start this show, this one mic. I'm loving it here. We're getting it going in the building. It's been great. This is your guy, D. Wills. Welcome to One Mic. Tis the season. You know, this is the cross-section of a whole lot of things happening in the world of sports. We got a great show for you tonight. We're obviously going to talk about Cubs win. And then we got the matchup between OK City and the Golden State Warriors, Westbrook and company, going back. He's facing his old teammate, Durant. A lot of talking, a lot of Twitter talking, a whole bunch of other things going. But before we proceed and I get more into the lineup, I got to welcome my guy Hank to the floor. How's it going, my man? You all right?
Man, listen, I'm just as happy as I could be as the leaves are brown come tumbling down here right now in the month of November. It is beautiful right here in the Midwest. As you said before, across sections of many things is going on in the sports world. Baseball just ending, but that doesn't mean that it's the end. There's so much going on, and I can't wait to get into it and talk about it.
All right. Hey, all of the callers come to you by our signature sponsor here, Carbon World Health. Located on Whitney Way in Madison, Wisconsin. The host for our recent RSC Live. Stop by and see Dr. Rodriguez and the folks and let them know that the RSG fellas sent you. Hey, man, I want to thank all the people in Rockford, Illinois. I was out there at Murphy's hanging with my guy Mo Red, who was a contributor on the RSG. I wanted to get in the mix with the Cubs fan. I wanted to get an understanding. And to me, the line of the night, when Cleveland tied it up, burst of frustration came out of the guy that's sitting across the table from me. He said, "I don't have another 50 years to wait for this." At that point, I realized what Cub fans have been going through. Man, you are a baseball guy, Hank. What was it like watching the game? I watched it. What was it like? I mean, What were your thoughts? Where does this game rank in terms of all the baseball you've been watching? You know, I'll let the floor get there. We're not going to do it inside the park. We're just going to freelance it right here today. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you thought about the game and how you saw it unfold.
Well, let me tell you. First of all, Game 7s in and of themselves just got so much intrigue and drama and anxiety to them. Whether you are have a rooting interest or not. But this was very entertaining for so many reasons. Okay, first of all, you had two historically bad baseball teams that found their way on the same stage. Last week when I spoke, I told you that this was going 7 and that the Cubs were going to win. But in the dramatic fashion in which it was, This would have made great theater. This would have made a tremendous movie. In fact, we've probably seen this movie somewhere. You know, when you go back and you think about the Major League movies, you know, with Wild Thing, okay, and Joe Boo, and you go back and think about Rookie of the Year with the little boy that could throw, you know, 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, all of these things you saw in movies, this is the only time you think you'd ever see the Cleveland Indians and the Chicago Cubs playing for an actual World Series unless it was on PlayStation, and yet here we were. It was wonderful to watch. It was so much. And then if you stayed up and you watched the dramatic home run by Rajay Davis to tie the game in the sixth, I knew that Cubs fans, every last one of them, I think it was at that time where the toilet paper stock went sky high in the state of Illinois. You know, you should have bought Charmin or Brown Tea or whatever else at that time. You would be a rich man after the eighth inning, after that home run blast. But then, you know, when you think about the Cleveland Indians, they have their own. They have their own niche of doing something that just rips your guts out if you're their fans as well. So here we get to the 10th inning. They don't win the game. And then just like a movie, we have a rain delay. Okay, so now we're going to prolong this agony even more. 17-minute rain delay before I knew what was going to happen. And let me tell you why I knew it was going to happen, D. Because it has nothing to do with the baseball game in of itself that I knew the Cubs were going to win. Prior to Game 7, we had something that happened in the NFL. What happened in the NFL is we had back-to-back ties, okay? The last time we had back-to-back ties in the NFL was in 1997. In 1997, the Cleveland Indians lost the World Series in 7 games to the then Florida Marlins. And guess what we have in the 2016? Back-to-back NFL ties. So what happened last night already preconceived and known. And I wasn't surprised, but I am happy for the Chicago Cubs. I'm happy for that fan base. 108 years is a long time to wait for a champion, you know. So Lions fans, we ain't got but another 45 years to wait before you get one. So just hang tough. It's coming. But I'm happy for that fan base. You know, anytime you can win a championship and get off the schneid, it's wonderful. And congratulations to the Cubs. They were deserved. They were the best team in baseball for most of the year. It was great theater, and it was a very exciting, entertaining game to watch.
Well, you know, one of the things that threw me off was I felt like Madden was outthinking the room. I felt like he should have stayed with Hamilton one more inning. I felt like he should have stayed with Lester for one more out. You know, I felt like, you know, it's like he was just a little bit off on all his decisions. And do you think both those managers at points last night were just out thinking of Rome and not really, you know, sometimes you got to let those players win it. Especially the Hamilton one. I mean, Hamilton. How did you think he handled him?
You know what? I really believe that, especially with Joe Maddon, I really do think that I think you're spot on. I think his gut, first of all, he's one of these kind of managers that I actually like. You know, in this world of baseball where everything is sabermetrics and numbers and everything, he really does manage from his gut. He does some unconventional things, and that's what's made him the manager that he is. But he managed last night like he had indigestion because he was doing a lot of stuff that – I'm just telling you, he was doing stuff that didn't make sense. You know, I mean, I know Aroldis Chapman. He throws 103 miles an hour. But my God, okay, for him to do what he did with that pitcher – you know, that would have been the narrative today had the Cubs lost. Why in the world did you use your pitching staff the way you used your pitching staff? And the same thing with Tito, you know, Francona. You know, what happened was he just ran out of horses. I mean, clearly the Cubs was a more talented team. But, you know, he just ran out of horses where, you know, you're asking yourself, you got a five-run lead last night or two nights ago, and you're using Chapman for multiple innings. I mean, that to me didn't make any sense. And then you bring him back again early. I mean, you got a three-run lead. I mean, the man's arm was going to fall off. And you're absolutely right. Use your pitchers. Use your pitchers wisely, especially when you – I think that a lot of that was he was overthinking. I think for both of those managers, they kind of got caught up in the moment a little bit. And how could you not blame them for that? Both of them was managing history. I think I expected a little bit more from Francona because he had already gone through it in Boston. But I will give Madden credit for moving Siegler up in the lineup, though. But because that was a big move and it paid off. But that, he rode that Aroldis Chapman horse right into the ground, literally. Okay, that horse is now glue this morning.
And Baez, my goodness, he was. I mean, he came back and got that home run. But I think he was fumbling and mishandling ground ball, things that he normally would be. I mean, it was just so many folks were trying to give it away, and you could have had goats, but because it was such a great game, you weren't looking at Cleveland and said, well, somebody messed up or whatever. It was just one of those games where, you know, the Cubs won it. You know, they all gave each other a chance, but, you know, it wasn't – you didn't have one of those moments where someone would be remembered for, you know, a mistake they made, and it just ended. And I tell you what –
Let me say this.
Go ahead.
I think that – listen – if you're watching this series, if you're in this series, okay, how can you not get caught up? We both played sports. We both played for some semblance of a championship. But this was a lot of baseball history that was being played in this World Series. Both managers, both benches understood what was at stake, okay? You're talking about with the Cleveland Indians. You're talking about what is it? Some 48 years or something to that effect, where since they've won. To when you're talking about or longer, 60 something. You were talking about 108 years with the Chicago Cubs. It's hard not to have that in the back of your head in a Game 7. And I do believe that they kind of got caught up in that, and maybe they didn't. Maybe they weren't consciously thinking that way with some of the moves they were making. But you saw a lot of stuff that, even with the players, you know, I wonder when you had a Hayward on third base for a chance to go the go-ahead run with less than two outs, are you now with Baez, why are you not letting him try to put the ball in play instead of trying to run a squeeze in the ninth inning?
Stupid like that.
That was the most boneheaded play I had ever seen. And I'm telling you, the Cubs are lucky that they won. Because Joe Madden would have been scrutinized by some real questionable stuff down the stretch in that game. He had the horses that got them over the top. But he made some moves that, you know, people would have been – he'd have been right there with the Bartmans and the Goats and everybody else with some of those decisions that he made down the stretch.
Yeah, I think that was the difference of last night's game. Rather than it was like a player that wasn't going to make a play, the scrutiny was going to be on the managers. He was already determined. From the 16 on, whatever was going to happen, the scrutiny was going to be on the managers, not the players. Given that, Madden's your Hall of Famer? His first World Series? Is it a Hall of Famer or no?
The jury's still out. I'm going to say no, and here's why I say no, okay? It wasn't Madden that put that team together, okay? Mm-hmm. The Hall of Famer is Theo Epstein, all right? Theo Epstein pulled an Ann Sullivan from The Miracle Worker with Helen Keller, okay? He cloned. I'm just telling you, he needs to be cloned. He needs to put a gene for each sport made out of Theo Epstein. This man has killed two curses, man, okay? Think about the magnitude of the body of work of what he's done. And I don't want to get off too much, but I want to just say that's what you need to look at. But Joe Madden, Yeah, he's coached and done a very good job when he was at Tampa. He happens to be the manager of record with the Cubs. With me, if he wins another one with the Cubs, then I think you call him Hall of Fame caliber. But, you know, he was in the right place at the right time. To me, it's like saying, would you call Terry Francona a Hall of Famer? Okay, because he coached the Boston Red Sox. He managed the Boston Red Sox in 2004 and then won it again. Okay, would you call him a Hall of Famer? I think you've got more of an argument for him versus you would with Joe Maddon, because now he has done, he's gotten a second team to the World Series, the Cleveland Indians. All right, and had he won, he would have been a lock. So I think for Joe Maddon,
I would say he's a Hall of Famer. Yeah, I would say, I would agree with you. I would say that Francona is a Hall of Famer, just in the fact that he got to that seventh game with two different teams. And you know, when he won those World Series, he won them against some tough teams in that division to get out and then go to World Series.
Right.
I mean, and then he's proven that, you know, when he moved and then came back and beat his old team, who was
right.
hot.
Right.
The road to it was enough to seal him because of that. You're right. I think if Maddon wins next year, this one was for Theo's Hall of Fame.
Right.
Next year would be for Maddon's Hall of Fame.
I agree.
Because keeping these guys focused and keeping them not too hyped because they're young and getting back there is going to require more of his work than Theo's work. I mean, Theo's going to have to keep tweaking. But you got a young nucleus that you can ride, and you know you got to continue to get some veterans around them. But you know, managing expectations and all that is going to require a manager like Maddon to get them back in that space.
Right. Mm. You know, I do want to say this though about the Cubs. Now that they have now exercised the demons of the GOAT and Bartman and everything over there on that side of town in Chicago, you know, now their narrative changes, okay, where they were once the lovable losers. Okay, keep in mind a few tidbits about the Chicago Cubs that we really didn't pay a lot of attention to before this season. This team is in a big market, okay, they've got money, they've won a World Series. Okay, for years, their fans, they were the lovable losers. Now they're World Series champs. This team could now become one of the most hated teams in baseball. It's going to be funny to see how that plays out. Why? Because they're winners, and they're talented, and they're young, and now they know how to win a world championship. And it's no different than the Boston Red Sox and the sympathy that a lot of sports fans had for them for trying to win the World Series. That sympathy is now gone out the window. For Boston, they're arrogant SOBs like everybody else. So it's going to be funny to see how the Cubs now are able to handle that new title of world champions and probably one of the more hated teams other than the lovable losers.
Now, baseball, I think, did like a – I mean, the World Series game 7 did like a 26 in the rating. You know, what do you think all this energy around baseball has staying power? Do you think there's new viewers who have come in to the under the baseball, you know, umbrella under their under the tent in that sense? You know, NFL is struggling, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit. But you know, it just felt like there was a lot of different energy around baseball, and I think people found that, you know, saw a different side of baseball, saw the entertaining, saw the personalities. You know, even you know having roles in them, you know, as a commentator, a lot of energy. People liked the way that they were a crew. In the same way that some of the football shows are getting, you know, they had some staying power. Or in the NBA, you have TNT guys. It seemed like, you know, that group of Rodriguez and Rose and those guys really, Frank Thomas, you know, along with just the production of baseball, seemed like people are reacting pretty well to it. What's your opinion on that, somebody who's kind of been watching the game and wondering about his growth?
I agree. I think that with the advent of the Major League Baseball Network, MLB Network, and them really reaching out to ex-ball players to give their perspective on what the game is going on, to be able to, in shows like Baseball Tonight, where now you've got more ex-baseball players, they're not just commentators. They've actually taken a page from the NFL, you know, and bringing these players on, putting them, you know, on camera and giving you a inside look at what's happening, things that maybe the casual fan don't realize what's going on in baseball, really taking you into the mindset of these major leaguers, you know, as they go through a season, as they go through the playoffs. The other thing baseball has done, which was a brilliant move, was adding a second wild card. What that did was it made more teams watchable later in the season. Once upon a time, you know, D, you only had four divisions, okay? You had the East and the West and the West, okay? So you had two teams out of each league that make the playoffs, okay? Now you've expanded that down, and you've got a one-in-the-game playoff. So baseball becomes relevant after the All-Star break all the way through to the World Series. Okay, you're watching playoff baseball at the end of September, and your team is in it, and there is a fight to get to that spot all the way through the second half of the season. That has made baseball palatable for a lot longer than it has been. That's one thing. And your teams are in it, and people are watching baseball to the very end. So then once you've got that going on, then you roll through to the playoffs. And then the playoffs become very, very entertaining because you have to play, especially the one-game playoff, okay? And so now the strategies and everything that these other networks are doing, they're making it very exciting, you know, for the fans to stay in the game. And then the players themselves are educating your casual fan. Okay, on the TV, they're able to say, this is what he's thinking right here. This is what they're doing right now. And it's not just all numbers. Okay, you got these guys, again, I'm going to go back to those sabermetricians. That's not what the casual fan gives a damn about. Okay, I want to know what he's thinking about. They want to know about some of those, you know, things that's going on in their head, some of those superstitious things they're doing and why they're doing them. That's what keeps the casual fan intrigued. And that's what you got going on with baseball. And, again, it starts in July after the All-Star break, and it rolls all the way through to the World Series, and that's what you saw. And when you got two teams that everybody know by the time the World Series shows up that they ain't won a damn thing, you know, since Moses was a baby, then, yeah, you got their attention.
You're going to mess around and have RJ call up here and keep messing with this.
I know he's going to call up here. Get him went through this. I told him, I said, baseball is a gut sport. That's what makes it fun. What you saw last night proved my point to the T. You saw two managers playing gut baseball. Now, did you see some mistakes? Of course you did, because they're played by human beings. People would have lost their mind. Well, why didn't you bring so-and-so in? Well, because he's such-and-such as the percentages show. So he sat on the bench when you could have used him? Use those players. At the end of the day, I don't care how many mathematicians you put in your front office, it's still played in the dirt, okay? And sometimes you got to trust your instincts. You just can't go pull out a calculator or an iPad or whatever technology you want to use and play the game. The only time that's good is on PlayStation. Get over it.
Well, and I think even things that they use like replay, I thought the timing, I thought they got the call quick, they got it, got the game moving. But, I, you know, it's one of the things, I think it's funny that we do have this proliferation of use of data in sports and stuff like that. But, you know, coaches have always used data. You know, it might not have been as sophisticated, but they always use tendencies. They always do that. But you have to – data can only get you into the stadium and the ballpark. At some point, you have to use qualitative analysis, and that's the gut and some of these other things that allow for you to contextualize it. And so, you know, I think it's a little bit of both, but I think we swung the pendulum too far the other way. If that were true, then, you know, the A's would win every year, or Houston Rockets would win every year. But at a certain point, there's certain instincts, you know, things that get you combinations, but you got to be able to look at somebody's eyes. You got to get a sense of how leadership plays. All these things play an important part in this. If you're just going to run by the numbers, you can be solid. It's kind of like if you're going to use data analysis, it's kind of like Stan Van Gundy's coaching. It'll get you to the finals, but it won't win it because at a certain point. You got to know who's going to make that shot. At a certain point, you got to use some of that Zen master stuff that Jackson used or Chuck Daly used in their gut to know to push that button that's going to make Isaiah do it. You know, it's one of those things that you got to know. That's something you got to know about your players. You got to know how they respond to things. All those things matter. So that's my little chime in on that. You listen to One Mic on the Real Sports Guys platform. I'm here with my guy, Hank. This is Devon Wilson. We're enjoying it. We talk a little bit about, obviously, the Cubs win. We were down. I was down there doing a little bit of, I call Facebook Live RSG session with my guy, Mo Red, who's been a contributor on the RSG platform. We were at Murphy's. Thanks to all the folks at Murphy's. They were good to us. We had a good time with all the folks down there. They had a good time after it was all over. It was just good to be a part of the atmosphere. You know, I cannot remember myself really getting excited about baseball, feeling good about it being in a space in baseball like that in a long time. And one of the things I really love about since doing this work and creating this platform and really being pushing the Inside the Park segment and being in there, it's really kind of helped me get back in the game. And I feel like baseball added some more fans. I think the Cubs are actually good for baseball. It's a middle America team. It's got a broad reach, kind of like the Green Bay Packers or the Pittsburgh Steelers or whatever. You got these folks who are all over the country because they had grandparents. The only thing that they could see is WGN and in the Cubbies, whether they lived in California or whatever, because we didn't have cable. And so some of these families have been indoctrinated. You know, the story about the young man who drove from North Carolina to Indianapolis to listen to the game at his father's grave. I mean, that's the kind of stories that come out of these Cubs stuff. My boy Bob Obrada, a good friend of mine from Streeter, Illinois, on Facebook, kissing his little bear cubby, whatever a frame that I remember him having in his office. That moment, I know how much it meant to him. You know, he played college baseball, loved baseball, but he loves his Cubs. So I think that's good for the sport, and we'll keep track. And, you know, it's great to have somebody like Hank who is carrying a flag for us on RSG. And you know, we're going to be doing some winter ball stuff with One Mic and with Inside the Park. We're going to be trying to get some more folks calling in who we can do some interviews in terms of stretching into that MLB piece. But, Hank, we're going to wrap it up, man. But, you know, your final thoughts, man, on the season before we move into our next segment.
Well, you know what? Again, it's been a wonderful baseball season. I don't think it could have ended any better. You know, in a year where we've had so many tragedies, either in the entertainment industry, in the sport industry, to see two historic baseball clubs go to a seven-game team, have a 3-1 lead, we knew that somebody was going to win something that they hadn't won in a long, long time. And it is poetic justice. You know, it is baseball theater, baseball poetry. To watch the Chicago Cubs, the beloved Cubbies, the lovable losers, finally get that, you know, reach the top, reach the summit. You know, I really feel good for them as a baseball fan, you know, for the Ernie Bankses out there, you know, for the Ryan Sandbergs out there, you know, for the Steve Bartmans out there. Congratulations, you very well deserve it.
I hope they invite Steve Bartman to be on one of the floats. That would be a great gesture of kind of getting him reconnected to his Cubs. When we come back, One Mic with myself and Hank, brought to you by Carbon World Health, who is responsible for all the what you hear they are sponsors for our RSC hotline, Carbon World Health, Whitney Way in Madison, Wisconsin. When you go over there, talk to Dr. Rodriguez and all the folks, let them know the RSC guys sent you. But when we come back, this is the political season, and Russell Westbrook just released his scorched earth policy, and he's burning up the NBA. When we come back, we got Russell talk.
can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Yes, we're all the way up. And we're here, we're back with our guy Russ, who is all the way up, all the way out, all the way in, all the way whatever, all the way scorched earth. It's Russell. I don't know what his middle name is, but I'm going to call him Russell P. Westbrook. He is crushing the league. He is triple-double, quadruple. It's like he's playing angry. And tonight, he sees his old blood, his brother. It's like a Star Wars kind of thing. You know, siblings get broken up. One goes evil. The other one goes to fight the Force. And then they show up with the sabers. They're like in a dark kind of hallway. And you're trying to figure out who's going to get their arm cut off. Man, I can't wait for this one. It's on TNT because it's the right way. So you know the fellas got a lot to say about them. I don't know if you've been paying attention to it, Hank. But, man, Russell Westbrook is not playing.
He's definitely coming out with something to prove. We're watching that. The concern I have with Westbrook, and you know, if you want to watch it, if there's any early season game that you want to watch, if you haven't gotten yourselves into NBA mode yet, this will probably get you there, okay? You've got the Warriors going against the Thunder, okay? Outside of the drama we already know about Durant going to Golden State, it's just the fact that the Thunder had a 3-1 lead on this team, okay, the last time we saw them, all right, and they end up losing, okay, and we know that Golden State went on to the finals, and we know the rest of that narrative. But, you know, there's always that talk, well, we didn't know you weren't coming back, well, I'm trying to win, all that stuff. So we're going to see that tonight, and you're going to see probably the best of Russell Westbrook because that's what he does. But we've seen this before, and I would caution, you know, the Thunder. Okay, this is one game out of 82. You know, you cannot be a scorched earth in the first week of the season. Okay, otherwise you're going to scorch yourself right out into a cinder. So, you know, I hope that while he is on a mission, that he learns from past mistakes of blowing out your whole whole season. And not having nothing left for the playoffs.
I'm going to tell you right now. So, Russell walks into, so you know, Kevin Durant loves to be, you know, he takes out the pictures. He was at Super Bowl. He had a credential with, you know, taking the pictures. So, Russell walked into Oracle with this with a shirt on that says, he's the official photographer. And so they think he's taking a shot at him. he's the official photographer, you the fake top photographer. Man, what's up with these young cats trying to be like Drake's liminal messages? Just come out and say what you mean what you say. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
All this liminal, I think I'm talking about you. I ain't really talking about you. Say what you mean what you say.
Look,
you know,
see,
you should have just put Durant on the back of the shirt and official photographer. Huh?
Yeah, but when you got social media like that and you can just throw out little subliminals all the time, leave the rest of the world talking about what the hell are they talking about? I don't get it. So, but you guys, but what it does is what they're getting what out of it, what they want to get out of it. You got to go find out. And now you're caught. Now you're all sucked up into it. It's great theater.
It's great theater, man. It's great theater, but man, these cats, I don't know. It's gonna be in Golden State's had a slow start, so
yeah.
You know, it's how they gonna handle the pressure. And I said this: the one thing about Golden State is that they didn't get what they needed last year. All Kevin does is give them more of what they already got,
exactly.
And that wasn't what they were missing last year. What they're missing are some other things. And so, it looks shiny when you first look at it, but, if you think about the things he does well, they already have some of those things. So, what is it that he does well that they didn't have?
They didn't address anything that caused them to lose a 3-1 lead and a chance to win another championship with 73 wins, okay? They were abysmal in the paint. You hear me? They were abysmal.
Yeah.
See, when I could have done a better job, okay? And I'm in my flip-flops right now, okay, in the paint. They were awful, all right? If you watch the end, if you are a basketball purist, and even if you're not, if you watch the end of the finals last year, and you watch what Golden State did on their last three or four possessions, you would have screamed from your lungs. You would have lost your mind. Okay, they didn't address that this year. They didn't address the fact that they have no low post presence worth a crap. That they have none of that. They go and get another perimeter potential slasher. Okay, and that's not going to get it done. And they came out looking flat. Okay, and I do believe that, and I'm surprised at Steve Kerr. Okay, I'm surprised at Steve Kerr. He came from knowing how to, what it takes to get in the paint and a championship pedigree. I'm surprised at him that this is what, and I know this is the NBA now, but, you just got beat by a team that plays the way you know you need to play in the playoffs. So you're absolutely right. They didn't address, it's all shiny and it's pretty, and they might look good again in the regular season, but when the playoff season comes again, here we go.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. So as we start looking at the season, I know it's pretty early. Are there some teams that surprise you, are sleepers, to think about? When I look at this, I'll start with this. One of the things that surprised me, at least in their beginning, is kind of how the Bulls are starting out. And one of the things I said about the Bulls, because people, even though they didn't put the right pieces, everybody criticized the right piece, the one thing they forget about D-Wade is his leadership and what his leadership can do for helping to develop that stuff in practice, their approach. A lot of things that he gonna come into the locker room already being able to do. And the one thing, when you get a focused Rondo, a whole bunch of things can happen. I think D-Wade's the kind of cat, there's very few cats that can focus Rondo. And I think D-Wade is one of those guys that can do it. So the Bulls have, I think they're going to be solid once they get some of the young players. Do I think they're going to make noise in the East? No, but I think that it's something you can build on. And even as their vets get a little bit older, they're going to help mature some of the young folks that I think will need to happen down the stretch. The other team that I think over the season will get better will be Minnesota. I think as they begin to learn how to play and get used to what Thibodeau wants them to do, right now they're low in the power rankings, but I think part of that is just learning how to play Thibodeau. I think they might end up moving a couple pieces in the season to clear up some space for some of the young cats to come into play. But I think when it's all said and done, I think by January, they'll start to learn how to play and really be able to get there. So, a sleeper from the East and a sleeper from the West, I think those two are interesting kind of folks.
When I look at it, the team that I'm calling a sleeper right now, and again, is really early. So we can only go by the last time we kind of saw them, right? And when you look at the West, there was one team that was very talented, pushed the Warriors a little bit, and they're going to be my sleeper, and that's Portland. I like what I saw out of Portland. They got off to, they're getting off to a slow start this year, but that's a team that you might just want to keep an eye on. Was it fool's gold, or is that an up and comer? Okay, with them, just keep an eye on them. They look very talented, look very strong. And I like any team that can play in the paint. And I think they can play in the paint. You know, they got a budding superstar over there. So I'm looking for them to make a push. When I go to the East, and again, you make a valid argument for Chicago. You know, they were a very dysfunctional family over there when they had Derrick Rose, and he couldn't stay healthy. He didn't act like he wanted to play even when he was. You know, in my opinion, okay. But the team I'm looking at in the East is a team that pushed slightly. The Cavaliers, really the only team that pushed the Cavaliers in the East was Toronto. No one's talking about Toronto. They play north of the border, you know. But that's the only team that really kind of gave Cleveland fits. Now, when I say push, I don't mean win. But when you're looking at the East, which in my opinion is weak, very weak, with the exception of Cleveland, that's going to be the one team I think that might give them some pitch, or they're going to probably be the second team that's coming that's going to be legitimate in the East.
Yeah, I mean, and Rose is getting off to a really strong start for them. You know, it's another one of those guys. Sometimes you watch these teams where these guys played in the Olympics, and you know they spent those practices sharpening their saw against great competition. Probably better workouts than they would get by themselves. And I think, DeRozan has definitely benefited from that and had a really strong start to the beginning of this year to get it off. And so I think they learned a lot last year about, how they needed to approach winning in the playoffs. You know, when you try to play at that level, a lot of that's going to depend on, are they going to become, there's a regular season style of play, and then there's, a playoff style of play. And as teams mature, they understand how to build in some of that playoff style play within the season for themselves, because they know at the end of the day, they got to be ready to play that kind of style, once the playoffs start going. And I think the biggest challenge for the Raptors is their style, and it could be fool's gold, their style works against probably 80% of the teams in the league.
Right, right.
When their style, it's not going to work against the San Antonios, the Clevelands, and some of these people who are elite defensive teams. You can't be ball dominant. It just overpower people because of your athleticism, or because you're not going to be more talented than them. So I think that's their biggest challenge, is that can they get those tough buckets? Can they find a third or fourth consistent scorer? And the other thing about Rosen is, which I see a little bit of this, is can they extend their range? A lot of times you got to make the game easy for yourself. And I think because, he's basically a mid-range jump shooter and slasher, that wears you out in the playoffs. You're going to take a lot of banging. And, even LeBron realized, even in that Golden State, when it changed, when LeBron just started trusting his jump shot, he started getting easier buckets, and he opened the floor up. And I think part of it is going to be Toronto. Those Toronto players are going to have to find a way to get a third or fourth score and find a way to get easy buckets. Everything in the playoffs for them looked like they're working so hard for it.
Right.
And versus when you watch Cleveland and Golden State and these other teams, because they use so much ball movement, they push the ball to the open person right away. So I think those are the things that you look for. I like Toronto. I mean, Casey does a really good job with those guys up there, those youngins. He's got some good pieces, but to go to that next level, that's the part that they're going to have to work on right now. Like, they can't wait till the second half to work on. They need to be building those habits right now, so by the time they get to the playoffs, they're running. So NBA is off and running. I'm feeling good about it. The NFL, man, ratings are a little bit. It's a great article that they talk to Sherman, and Sherman says he thinks it's down because there's no fun. And when you watch baseball, I think one of the clear thing about watching a World Series, and you watch them, there's a lot of fun and energy. Just baseball has, there's 162 games, but those guys are practical jokers, whatever. It just seems like the guys. Basketball players have a lot of individuality. Even when a lot of this stuff happened climate-wise, it seems to be a good relationship between the NBA Players Association and the league. Football, I heard Mike Greenberg saying this, the problem is the people who are complaining the most about the product are the players. And, you know, the ratings are down. So, I mean, what do you think? What do you think about it? Is this just a blip? Is it the political season? Is it just, you know, we're going to see something different next year? What's your feeling about it? Is Sherman right? Is it the no fun league?
He is right. And the problem is because football, NFL stands for the no fun league, okay? And you make a valid point. You've got to make the game entertaining for the people that is spending their hard-earned money to come out and watch you play. All right? You've made some – think about the NBA. Think about the personalities in the NBA. Think about the personalities in Major League Baseball. Think about how those teams embrace those communities. Okay? Think about college football. Think about the pageantry and everything that goes along with the collegiate football game. Okay? Now, you think about the NFL. It is the quintessential corporate league, okay, where you're laying your body on the line, but if you show any sort of emotion, you're penalized for it, okay? The league is a cookie-cutter league, all right? Anytime you've got back-to-back games where it's 6-6, 27-27, the league, there's nothing exciting about it. And then you want to throw in the other narrative that goes on with the NFL, and that's all of the noise off the field. People get turned off. People go and watch football, basketball, hockey for the game, for the sport, for the name on the front of the jersey. All right? They go to be entertained. There's so much noise around the NFL. There's so much where the players – you know, are treated as mini corporations versus teams, camaraderie. You just don't see a lot of fun. And people sense that. People sense that. Okay? We talked a little bit about it last week. But watch an NFL game after you've watched a full – now, you watch college football just like I do. But watch college football all day on Saturday. I challenge anybody out there. Just watch it. You're a football fan. Watch college football from sunup to sundown. Okay? Then on Sunday, turn around and watch the NFL. I promise you'll be asleep at halftime. It is that different. You'll be asleep at halftime. But how many folks stayed up after that rain delay and watched Game 7? There was drama. There was joy. After those teams won, you saw real emotion. And that is a problem. The NFL, and with all the noise that the captains, like we spent 2 weeks talking about Kaepernick. Then you talk about Deflategate. Then you talk about domestic violence. And that's too much for people who's just trying to get away and watch a game. Think about that. We go to sports for relief. If our sports becomes reality, then it's not fun. And I'm going to go somewhere where I can get away. And I think that is a big problem for the NFL, because guess what? It's an election season for football. I mean, for the rest of these sports too, and they're not struggling.
You listen to the Real Sports Guys. One Mike. This is Hank and Devon. Right now, we're talking about a little about, you know, what the problem is with the NFL, and you know, I think you hit on. I was thinking about this today, and this will make sense to you, but for a lot of young folks who are, I would say, under 25, this may not be their reality. But anytime you play football outside, you want to get your hands on the ball because you want to be the first one to do the Billy White Shoes Johnson move, or you want to do the Quake, or you wanted to do the Icky Shuffle. You know, that's what you talked about when you were on the playground. You know, you score that touchdown and flag football, tackle football out there, and you start doing the Icky. You know, none of that is part of – they're taken away from that, and that is what builds your fan base. And,
right.
And there's no real reason why you do it. And so, you know, I think that's the part that, you know, makes me struggle a little bit on this, is that I think – and they can't get out of their way. It's like – Silver is beating them at every turn. you know, he's beat him at every turn. He's building a positive relationship with the Player Association. You know, they're trying to make sure everybody get paid. You know, obviously the owners are going to get their stuff. But, you know, basketball seems like it's in a very healthy place. Baseball seems like it's getting there. They got the strongest union. But football just seems like the owners don't see some investment in their players or opportunities to market their players as a good thing. And some of that might come from the way in which coaches view the team. You get the people like Belichick, there's like there's no I in team. You get this culture around it that pushes away from what they think individualism is going to do to the game. And I say you can still regulate to some sense some of those things, but when they cross that goal line, I mean, what was better? There's people all over the country doing the peppers, where he got that return, and then he went across the goal line like he was in a track. Like,
right.
Nothing was better than that. I was in the office like, who's this?
Right.
You know, and
right.
Everybody knew who it was. You know, and I think that's one of the big issues.
It's a huge issue. It's a major issue because there's no emotion in the game. And you're absolutely right. I mean, there's no emotion in a football game. And if you show any emotion, you're flagged. And, you know, it becomes boring, you know, and fans clamor for it. You know, you got people like Cam Newton who's trying to bring fun back to the game somehow. And all of a sudden they want to call him a ham. He's drawing attention to himself. Okay? But the people down in Carolina love him. You know why? Because, yeah, he wins, but in the same token, he's trying to bring something to the game, and it's not there. And you have NFL players that tell you they love the game, but the game is not fun for them. Why is it not fun for them? Because it's too much like work, okay? And when your work, and when it becomes a job, then I don't need it no more. And I think that's what you see. You see a lot of guys going into the NFL with a lot of enthusiasm, and it's not fun. It's not fun. And but you know, you got folks that try to watch it, and the NFL is doing stupid stuff to try to bring people fat back, you know, like color rush uniforms. What the hell's that got to do with the product on the field? Okay? So everybody looks like clowns now, but ain't nobody laughing. You know, I mean, you hear me? I mean, come on. I mean, I don't know who's making these decisions. Let the guys play the game the way it's intended to be played. Chances are they won't get hurt as bad. Chances are if you release some of this tension, let these guys just play football. We'll get a more – you brought up Billy White Shoes Johnson. You brought up Icky Woods. You brought up an era when football was fun, okay, when it was fun to watch, when you had great players able to play with that passion, able to play with that enthusiasm. They weren't just corporations. And you saw some great football at the professional level, and now you don't. Anytime you can't think of the top 10 quarterbacks without being because everybody sucks because everybody's the same. You know, that tells you something. Running backs or any other position.
Well, I mean, look. Yeah, I mean, you had what? You had Arian Foster and Andre Johnson just retire midseason.
Right. Right.
They just walked away. Uh-huh. And these guys are doing a better job of taking care of the money so they can walk away.
You're right.
So you're losing your talent a little bit earlier than you anticipate. Yep.
Right.
So that to me is a major problem.
As much as people want to think they're walking away because of the injury factor, I disagree. I really think that it has everything to do with the fact that it's not fun anymore. Okay? I look at baseball. Look at David Ortiz. Now, granted, I'm not taking nothing from the physical element of football. I'm not saying that, but they know what the inherent risk is of playing football, okay? And you had guys like Jackie Slater back in the day that played until their 40s, all right, Hall of Famer. You had they played because they loved the game, not because they need to get paid. They loved the game, okay? You got guys in baseball that's playing well into their 40s. Okay, you had a guy, Ross, last night. Oldest man to hit a home run. Okay, last night. Come on. But in the NFL, you had guys that played until their late 30s. It's not fun for them anymore. When you got passion for the sport, you'll put your body on the line. These guys don't want to play because it's not fun. That's the way I'm looking at it. That's why they're walking away. Concussions didn't just start.
Right. I mean, Yep. I mean, we don't have any more lines like this. I get it out.
Can't wait.
Like, that was the moment. When he did that, at the end of that game and came up and said that, to me, I mean, that's the attitude. That's the bravado. That's the personality. And people have been saying that forever. You know,
right.
We take away that we ball it up and they don't have that emotion. You know, I think that, you know, the NFL, you know, it's hard because they have a structure and a group of folks who are so privileged, who are making decisions. They can't see it.
Right.
They can't see it. It's not like NFL folks who, a lot of those guys who were in leadership, Adam Silver and those guys, they had an orientation in some of these cultures that allow for them to see this stuff in ways that a lot of NFL execs, and there's some aspect about the NFL that has so much of the privilege of society in a way that doesn't have them exposure connected to diversity and a whole bunch of other things that would get them to see why this is important. You know, some of the people are blaming, you know, some of the protests and some of the Colin Kaepernick stuff as contributing to it. But those same protests are in the NBA, and that made them even more popular.
Right.
You know, WNBA had more eyeballs on it. So why is there only a negative impact on the NFL? So there's a lot of, I think, pieces here that we need to pay attention to, you know, or this could be a blip in the record. You know, next year we don't have the Olympics. I mean, you don't have the presidential elections. You know, you don't have one more thing that's eaten up. You know, maybe we see the numbers go back up in ways that, you know, may lead to say this was just a blip in, you know, football's back. But I got a feeling there's some permanent stuff that's been happening. The rise in the NBA, MLB getting a little bit chip away here, some of the other things. I think, you know, I think there's something that they need to start, you know, paying attention to so that, you know, they can try to counter this. But I just don't know if they have so many blind spots in some of their key people, key places. You know, I don't know if they're even going to see it. When we come back, we're going to talk college football. A lot going on, and you know Hank's going to have a lot to say. That's his thing. He loves him some college football. You know that he's going to, he's going to hit you hard with it, because this is a space where he's going to be going off. A lot's happening in college football. We had the first, I think, rankings come out. And, you know, he might start out with something like this.
I don't have facts to back this up.
But then he'll say what he's going to say. So you know that's going to happen there coming soon with you. It might force us to bring out. Some of y'all have not met Cocaine. And Hank and I might be going back and forth on a number of things. You know, but we usually bring up some stuff. You know, we might not go too hard on each other, but it's college football. We come back. This is One Mic on a Real Sports Guys platform, brought to you by Carbon World Health, where you can train like a pro, located on Whitney Way in Madison, Wisconsin. Go see Dr. Rodriguez and the folks. Let them know that the Real Sports Guys sent you over there to just, you know, get your medical spa treatment. Get your medical spa on so that you can feel good about it. All right, we'll talk to you when we come back.
Hi, this is Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the Real Sports Guys. Whoopig.
All right. Listen to One Mike, the real sports guys here going on the platform. We're having a great time here. I got my guy, Hank, in the building. We're moving into this, the college football portion of the program here. We'll probably spend our remaining time up in this space getting it right, getting a little hyped a little bit. You know, it's 'tis the season. You know, college basketball about to get started up, but we're still here. So, you know, we got to.
I'm just trying to get it hyped.
Let's go blue. All right, so you missed your fans. So, man, Hank, man, I'm looking at the rankings here, and it's pretty interesting when we start to think about the polls here. I was, to tell you the truth, I was kind of surprised when they came out with this. Because, so look, we got Alabama 1, we got Clemson 2, we got Michigan 3, we got Texas A&M 4, we got Washington 5, Ohio State 6, Louisville 7, Wisconsin 8, Auburn 9, and Nebraska 10. Texas A&M, I mean, I know they had some games, but in Washington being 5th, they're clearly saying they're not sure about Washington.
I don't think that's the case at all. I'm going to tell you what I think. First of all, you do have a little bit of a Big Ten SEC bias because that's who everybody see. That's who everybody talks about. The darling of the Pac-12 was Stanford. Stanford fell quickly, okay, and they fell fast. So I think the narrative, again, is not so much that they're not sure about Washington, but that Stanford wasn't as good as they thought they were going to be, so now they're gun-shy. They're saying now when you look up and you see a weak Arizona, a weak Arizona State, the darling of the Pac-12 for years is Oregon, and they're terrible, okay? So now you're looking at teams like Washington, Colorado, Utah, you know, being the teams in the Pac-12. You look at USC that fell hard, fast, early, okay? So that's the problem. The problem with Washington are the teams around them, okay, that did not meet expectations. They're a very good football team if you watch them play. But that's the problem with Washington. A&M right now is because they're only lost to the number one team in the nation, all right, and they've got a couple of good wins on their schedule now. When you look at the fact that they beat Auburn and the fact that they beat Tennessee, I think they're a fraud. But I think that because of their only loss is to Alabama, that's what that's all about. You look at Michigan, who's been dominant in all of their victories, and you look at Clemson's strength of schedule and who they've beaten. Okay? They've beaten Florida State. They've beaten Louisville. All right? So even though it seems like they've snuck by some games, I can see because of who they beat and who they have just beaten, that's why you look at where Clemson is.
So, I argue the Washington thing. I can believe you on whatever. But I'm going to make a couple arguments here. The teams they're supposed to beat, they beat them like they stole some. So they beat Rutgers 48-13. They beat Idaho 59-14. They beat Portland State 41-3. But then I would argue the top teams that everybody said fell off, it's kind of like anybody who fought George Furman when he was young and he beat him up, they did not fight well the next two or three fights. I think the reason why those teams did not do well is because of how Washington beat them down. So then they play Arizona. They beat them 35-28. But then they whooped Stanford like they stole some. I think that had something to do with it. I think it took Stanford a couple. They were shocked that they got pushed around like that. They got beat 44-6. Remember you and I were talking about at the beginning of the season, we're like, you know, who's on our can't trust it list? I don't think we had Stanford at all on our can't trust it list. I mean, those are solid performers. They beat them like they still so. Oregon, yeah, they're down, but they beat them 70-21. I don't care how down you are. When you beat Oregon 70-21, that's a thrashing. And then
well,
my
keep
old
in mind,
over there, Coach
his defensive
Anderson,
coordinator is Brady Hoke, so that ain't saying much.
I understand that. That's their problem. But I would say this. And then they beat my old friend, Coach Anderson, 41-17. Then they played a tough Utah team and beat them 31-24. I think Utah's going to make – so I think – when you really look at, they are not playing down to their talent. They're rising to the teams they play. I was just surprised that you would have them over Texas A&M when you look at the way they won, even against all their competition. And so people can make a criticism of Oregon, but they beat them like, it'd be different if they only beat Oregon 42-38, but they beat them 70-21.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I'm not a big Washington fan, but I'm just like, it doesn't make any sense, at least for this first vote.
No, I agree with you.
To have this limit, yeah.
I agree with you. I think the fact that Washington, which is undefeated, has dominated their opponents, that they should be in there. Again, I started my statement. I think that it's a bias. Okay, I still think that there is an SEC bias. I don't think that A&M is the fourth best team in the nation. I absolutely do not. Okay, they gave up the lead to Tennessee, who I told you they were on the can't trust list. You remember? Okay,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gave up that lead, and Tennessee has proven to be a can't trust team all season. All right, now just because they escaped with that victory. Okay, and then hang with Alabama for a half. You know, I don't think you reward a team for that. I think that in this first pass, I think they did Washington a disservice. But because nobody watches who they play, and then when they go on and look at the teams that they play and their records, and they're not the teams that they once were, I mean, I'm pretty sure that was the conversation around Washington. I think it had less to do with Washington and more to do with the teams that they played, not having the seasons that was anticipated of them.
Yeah, and I would say I think the victory is probably helping them the most, given how they're beating people down now. It's the Auburn victory. That's probably the one that's helping them the most right now.
Yeah, I agree. A&M.
Because they weren't really into the Alabama game enough for that to even be relevant. I mean, they got to be 33-14, and I think, you know, Alabama was in control. I felt like they were in control most of that game. I didn't feel like A&M was really threatening them. But I think the Auburn game probably gives them, you know, some play. And we'll find out some stuff over the next couple of weeks. You know, they got to play, you know, the state of Mississippi coming up here.
Right.
To get out, then they got to play LSU. And so
right.
I think it'll take care of itself. If they run a table there, then I think, you know, maybe they make a case for themselves. You know, Ohio State, man, is – you know, I had a chance to watch them when they were in Madison. They basically got Samuels and JT Barrett. If you can hold on, if you can control those two entities, it doesn't feel like they got anything else offensively going. They throw a lot of those swing passes, a lot of that jet sweep stuff, nothing really vertical. JT Barrett is an incredible player. To see him live, you know, he's as good as advertised, but it don't seem like there's a lot more around them. To the offensive line, not as strong as it needs to be. That Michigan-Ohio State game is going to be interesting. You know, Louisville is, you know, with Jackson, you know, who is trying to take this whole Heisman Trophy thing to the next level. You know, he making Houdini plays every time, every week you watch him. And they're battling in every game. You know, they got the coach, the riverboat gambler, and you better check his pockets before he leave the room. Patino, they got a lot of stuff going on here, and they're gonna have a couple of games. You know, the Louisville Houston game, given Houston's got two losses, that game could have been much bigger. coming down the stretch. It would have been a better game, but it's still going to be a good game for them coming down the stretch to see what they can do. Kentucky is 5-3 this year, so they're solid. You know, you got Stoops over there doing. They got Stoops over there doing a solid job, and so they got some teams with winning records down the stretch to kind of build a case for them. But they got the loss to Clemson. That big win over NC State. I mean, NC State is solid. Dorrance trying to get them on the right. They took them behind the woodshed. But the Virginia one was one they had to get out. You know, they had to kind of get out of there by their chinny chin chin. It is not going to be a great win for them. So we got a lot going on here, man. And to see that we got a number of Big Ten teams sitting around, it's kind of like the Big Ten is in the SEC. The Big Ten is starting to lift up. Its credibility is coming up here in recent years. I mean, you see the number of Big Ten teams sitting right in there. That's an impressive list, along with the SEC. Basically, those two conferences are owning it right now. So they're going to be in the collision course. The team that I think is sneaking up here that people have to watch, they might not get into the Final Four, but they might make a run down the stretch, depending on how things shape out, after just their recent loss. But they can bounce back a little bit. As I like Utah, I mean, I think they played tough. Washington got out of there. I think Utah's a team to watch out for. Nebraska's had that loss against Wisconsin. Wisconsin's another team to watch out. They have two losses against Ohio State and Michigan, and they have a chance to run the table here and get into the mix in a way that could be very beneficial to them. So there's a lot more work to be done here. Do you think a two-loss team could actually get into the Final Four?
You know what? It's going to take a lot, okay? Mm-hmm. It's going to take a whole lot because of the teams in front of them, all right? Is it possible? Of course it's possible. When you look at it this year, I don't. And the reason why I don't is because the team with the two losses, all right? I take nothing away from Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin's had an incredible year. Okay, with that being said, Wisconsin doesn't have an offense, all right? They've exposed some teams because their defense is very good, but their offense, I mean, Tommy Frazier, okay, they should just start calling him a Pop-Tart, or they should start calling him some other dessert, because he's a turnover machine. He's a turnover. That's what he does, okay? And he reserted back to his old self last week, okay? The team that everyone is keeping in the top 10 is Wisconsin. It's because of that incredible strength of schedule, and the teams that they've beaten and the teams that they've lost to continue to win. Okay? Michigan, Ohio State, LSU, okay? Nebraska. All right? So that's what it is. But if you're going to ask me, you take a two-loss Wisconsin over the top five teams, okay? I don't think they can stop those teams from scoring. All right? And that's the reason why I don't think this year would be the year that would happen. All right? So maybe, but as these conferences get stronger and these teams lose early, and now with some of these conferences, they're getting away from the old FCS scheduling those teams. And you're going to have some teams with one loss early in the year before they figure out who they are, like Penn State. All right? Penn State all of a sudden becomes a dangerous team in the month of November when they look like James Franklin was trying to save his job early in the year. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to take an awful lot. And when you'll see a two-loss team in the playoffs is when you start looking at teams really, those schedules start getting tight and tight and tight late in the year. Not yet, but it's coming.
Yeah, you know, I think, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, you've really seen some teams kind of bounce back and try to right their season, and especially some of these big conferences. You know, Northwestern was battling a little bit with Ohio State here recently. You're going to see some of those teams in the SEC who didn't look good, but they got coaches who are trying, you know, who are trying to make save their job. They're going to be turning them around. They're going to keep coaching through the end. When you're looking at coaches that you don't think are going to be back next year, are there any coaches as you look around that who have been under fire? I mean, obviously Charlie Strong, you know, even though he basically has freshmen and sophomores playing, just now getting his recruiting class up, you know, whoever comes in there is going to be winning with his players. You know, are there other players, other teams, that other coaches that you think are going to be, you know, on the block?
Absolutely. You know, Charlie Strong is the obvious one. But the other one I think you got to look at is Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. Because Brian Kelly, you know, he's been able to recruit well there, okay? But, you know, while Notre Dame might have other issues, like possibly just joining a conference, you know, we are in the era of the college football playoff, okay? Look at Notre Dame's schedule. Look at how they faltered down the stretch last year, all right? Now, when you start talking about, yeah, we got into the national championship game several years ago, you know, with and played Alabama, they got their doors blown off. And they were fortunate that year, but they have not rebounded anymore. So that's one coach I would look at that could possibly be on the block. Another coach, and this might be a surprise to you, it might be Mark Helfrich out in Oregon. All right, Oregon, yeah. While, yes, making it to the college football championship with Marcus Mariota, those were basically Chip Kelly's players. Okay, those are Chip Kelly's players. Okay, since then, they have been an afterthought, and they can't play defense at all. All right, so is this the right way to go with that team? Because Oregon has built up something. Okay, they have become that team. So they can't have these kind of seasons. They're not going to make a bowl game this year. Okay, so that's not going to look good for them. Those are two coaches that I would look at that, you know, just kind of off the radar, if you will, but with big names that could be gone by the end of the season.
Yeah, and part of that is Notre Dame realizing that that's who you are. Like, every 3 or 4 years, you'll make a run for a national championship, but you're going to have some tough years in between. If you can realize that that's who you are, then Brian Kelly is your coach, because you know he's going to figure out how to bounce back. But when you have people like P.J. Fleck at Western Michigan doing the kind of job he's doing, what happens is those ADs, those boosters are like, especially in the Midwest, like, you know, that's a guy that probably can end up at Notre Dame. We like his speeches. He's going to be like Newt Rockne. He's going to be the new age Newt Rockne. And they start to get enamored with these up-and-coming cats. And so, you know, I think you're right. I think part of it is, you know, do you have organizations that know how to build for the long run? And do they believe, you know, that Brian Kelly can figure out how to fix it and get them back in the mix, but are you going to be patient enough to do that? That's it, you know, and that's part of it is some of these fan bases being delirious about what they can expect to be. And I think that's the challenge. I mean, Notre Dame is only going to be so good because of the academic challenges they have in getting some players in, and they can't get everybody. All these things, but to be able to be in the conversation every 2 to 3 years, is that enough for a place like that? You know, versus, you know, now you see a Michigan rising up in the Midwest. You know, even some of the places where you own, you got Lovie Smith down in Illinois. He's going to start getting his act together, get some recruits. You know, as Paul Chris gets used, he's going to get that. So a lot of your markets where you are owning in Chicago and some of these other places, you know, you're going to have competition, you know, as these teams get stronger. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I think those are good coaches, I think, who could be, you know, on the list of the chopping block a little bit. You know, my good friend, you know, I like him a lot, or, you know, I would call him a good friend, but guy, no, you know, Brett's got to get it together down in Arkansas. I love it.
I agree.
But he's got to figure out how to get them over the top. And, you know, he'd probably be the first to say he's disappointed in how they're playing down there. But, you know, that was my worry about going down there, is that for him, is that you can only get, you know, you can only get so much talent. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right,
when you're competing over there on the side, like, if, you know, if he was on the Georgia side or coaching at Tennessee, you know, I think he had already been in the SEC championship. You know, I just, you know, just being around him, that's the kind of guy he would get there. You know, but he's got to get a couple of difference makers, you know. And when he got hammered by it's not that he's won some good games, right? He's won some games. He's competed against Alabama all the way to the end. But he's got that loss, that bad loss to Texas A&M, and then he's got that bad loss to Auburn. The Auburn loss, I think, really hurts because it's so recent. But
right,
he's the kind of guy who will bounce back and beat a Florida and an LSU or win, you know, three out of the last four. But he's got to have a strong finish here to kind of keep it going in the right direction. So, you know, I think he's another person that, you know, they might not get him at the end of this year, but next year is going to be a big year for him. As long as he's been there. So who do you think LSU takes? Because they got their interim coach here. I think some people have been clamoring for their offense has opened up a little bit. But do you think Jimbo Fisher is a possibility down there? You know, what do you think about LSU and that job? And, you know, who's right for that job? Sometimes I think they're as delirious as anything. Do you see some candidates that might be right, or is that the case?
Let me tell you something. I think LSU is delusional. Okay. I think that they've gotten too big for their britches, as the old folks used to say. They had a great coach, and believe me, anybody going to LSU, they're going to have to open up the bank book. You know, the bank vault, and come and get them, because believe me, these other coaches see what they did with Les Miles. All right, so you talk about a Tom Herman, you talk about a Jimbo Fisher. Everybody keeps throwing those names around. The thing is about it is, it's going to take them time to establish their program. Why, if you are a Jim Herman, would you go? Would you go to LSU when, you know, you've got to establish yourself? Is the money going to be there? Yeah. But if I'm Tom Herman, if Texas is open, I'm going to Texas. If I'm Jimbo Fisher, okay, I'm just a year removed from the playoffs. Why would I leave Florida State? All right? They might want to look
right
there. Yeah,
that's what I don't understand. I don't understand. Why would he leave Florida State? Like,
why would you leave Florida State? See, a lot of times they say stuff that don't make sense. Keep in mind, there was a reason why Nick Saban left. All right? There was a reason why Nick Saban left. So he was making good money. He won a national championship, but he got out of Louisiana to go to the pros. All right? People need to pay attention to that. I don't think it's as much of a slam dunk as folks think. I think if Orgeron wants a job, he's proven it with two big programs. He did it at SC, and he's doing it now. Okay, he's turned the team around. They might want to look inward instead of looking outward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. You're at Florida State, and you basically, you know, have maybe a handful of teams that are going to compete against you every year to have a gateway to the Final Four. Why would you then go to the SEC West, where you're going to be competing against the entire division that's going to make you struggle? Like, I don't understand the rationale about that. And the LSU job is not better than the Florida State job, in my mind. I mean, at worst case scenario, you say it's even. And if it's even, then I'm staying where I am, where I got fewer people to, you know, Dabo going to make a Dabo mistake in some of these games. You know, he ain't that far away from making some Clemson being Clemson. And so, you know, you have, you know, maybe some other teams come into the play, maybe Miami getting stronger. You know, I mean, it's just, but it's not going to be the same level of craziness that you're going to deal with LSU. So, I mean, I hear that talk, and if he does it, cool. Maybe it's something he knows that nobody else knows. But I wouldn't, when you got that talent pool in Florida, and Florida State's got your tradition, and you've already dealt with following the legend by winning your own national championship. So you don't have to live with questions about Bobby Bowden, you know, or like Brett Bielema when he was trying to get, you know, make sure he's out of the shadow of Alvarez. You're not dealing with it anymore. You don't put that to bed. You got your own legacy to build on. So you're right. I never really kind of understood any of that. So, all right, we're moving towards the close of the end. We're going to drop the mic. At first on the schedule, I had me dropping the mic. But given this baseball, this is what I'm going to show you the talent of Hank. Given that we've had this incredible baseball, and the reason why I'm pausing because somebody's got to hold Steve Kerr back. He made a bad call. Steve Kerr was about to run on the floor and get hit. So I'm going to throw it to you, Hank, to like close us out, given that baseball season is over.
Okay, listen. So we're going to start with baseball because it's been an amazing season. A season that starts in spring training in February, opens up in April, ends in November. You know, so you've pretty much got the whole year. You know, we've had some ups, we've had some downs, we've had some tragedies, we've had some goodbyes. Went through a lot of those last week. You know, so it's farewell to the regular season. It's farewell to the postseason. We're coming up on the winter meeting soon. But you know, with everything that I want to end it with this though. You know, we've talked about this season. We've talked about fans. We've talked about everything. We've talked about protests and everything. But I want everyone out there right now to exercise one thing. Okay, in less than a week, we go to the polls. Exercise your right to vote. There are folks out there that died for that opportunity. There are folks that protested for that opportunity. We've talked about protests and the First Amendment and all the rights that people have in this great country that we live in. So I will say to you tonight to take that opportunity and your civil duty and your right to vote, and you make your voice heard next week on November 8th.
Thank you, brother. Hey, y'all, we out. The Resistance. See you next time.